Music marks the times of our lives, reminds us of days gone by, and inspires today's and tomorrow's hits. Hi, I'm D. Dwayne, and welcome to The Real Deal, spotlighting the best music and the biggest artists of yesterday, providing an insight of just what made them so great. It is a pleasure and an honor to present not only one of the great pioneers of funk, but a musical visionary whose impact has influenced today's R&B, hip-hop, rock, and mainstream pop. From Prince to Michael Jackson, Public Enemy to the Black Eyed Peas, they were all influenced and inspired by Sly Stone of Sly and the Family Stone. We're going to take a look into how they got their start, how they made such a huge impact on popular music, and of course, we will feature all of their biggest hits along the way. So fasten your seatbelts and get ready. Here comes Sly and the Family Stone. Sylvester Stewart, otherwise known as Sly Stone, was born on March 15, 1943 in Denton, Texas. Raised in a deeply religious middle-class family, Sly was the second of five children in the Stewart family. Identified as a child prodigy, by the age of seven, he was already proficient on the piano. By his 11th birthday, he mastered the guitar, bass, and drums. Sly got his start in the church choir performing gospel music with his brothers and sisters in their first group, the Stewart Four. Here's Sly as he thinks back and remembers the early days.
And I remember I remember at the time I just enjoyed singing in the choir. And I remember I was the youngest in the area. And I remember I wanted to be a preacher or something.
A preacher? Well, Sly was never short on passion or ambition. In high school, he learned to play a number of instruments and joined several high school bands. One of those was a doo-wop group called the Biscaynes. The name Sly was a common name for Sylvester throughout his years in high school. In the mid-1960s, Sly worked as a disc jockey for a San Francisco soul radio station, KSOL, where he was sometimes mixed in white rock artists like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. At times, he would even have a tendency to turn the record down and perform live with his own versions of songs. This caught the attention of fellow DJ Tom Donahue, who hired Sly as a producer on his record label, Autumn Records. Sly had some success at Autumn Records, but most of all, was learning studio production and engineering techniques that would later have an impact on what was to follow. That was just about the time when he was approached by saxophonist Jerry Martini.
Jerry Martini is the guy that really started it. This guy, he plays saxophone in the group now. And he came to the radio station and decided that, Sly, you ought to be the leader of this group. And I was doing fine at the radio station, I thought. So we started looking around for everybody other than my sisters and my brother, because they were automatically in if I was in.
This was the beginning of Sly and the Family Stone, with Sly on organ, his brother Freddie on guitar, Larry Graham on bass, Greg Errico on drums, Cynthia Robinson on trumpet, and of course, Jerry Martini on saxophone. They played the club circuit in California's Bay Area and made a huge impression on not just being a great band, but also being multiracial with female musicians who could play, and play well. The group was signed to Epic Records and in 1967 released their first album, A Whole New Thing. The album was good musically, but it didn't perform well in the stores. Epic Records wanted a more commercial sound. They wanted a hit. Enters record executive Clive Davis. Clive talked to Sly into writing and recording a record, a hit record. Well, reluctantly, Sly and the band presented the single Dance to the Music, and upon its release in February of 1968, Dance to the Music became a widespread groundbreaking hit. It was also the band's first charting single, reaching number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100. Here's the song that got them started, Dance to the Music on The Real Deal.
Dance to the music. has some bottom, so that the dancer just won't hide.
The Music was later included on an album of the same name in 1968. Although the third album, Life, also suffered from low sales, their fourth album, Stand, released in 1969, became a runaway success, selling well over 3 million copies and spawning their first number one hit, Everyday People. My name is Dee Duane, and you're listening to The Real Deal. And the Family Stone were on a roll, and the hits just kept on coming. If you had the 45 of Everyday People, all you had to do was flip the record over and bam!
Walking in the street. baby, he say,
By this time, Sly's sister, Rose Stone, joined the band contributing lead and background vocals as well as piano. Released in 1969, I Want to Take You Higher was, according to Sly, not a message song about drugs. Instead, it was simply dedicated to music and the feeling that one gets from music. At this point, Sly and the Family Stone were at the peak of their success. My name is Dee DeWayne, and you're listening to The Real Deal.
Ha!
trying to tell you, this album had hit after hit for Sly and the Family Stone. You Can Make It If You Try was kind of a message song. It was the only non-charting song from the album entitled Stan. Well, Clive said he wanted a hit, and Sly gave him 5 in a row. Released in August of 1969 and reaching the number 2 spot on the charts, here's one of my favorites, Hot Fun in the Summertime.
End of the spring and here she comes back. High, 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 high there. Damn. Summer days, oh summer days. That's when I have most of my fun.
Say, Sly's musical style was different. A little bit of funk, rock, and R&B, their sound was a melting pot of many influences and cultures, including a little bit of James Brown, Motown, and psychedelic rock music. Wah-wah guitars, distorted fuzz bass lines, church-styled organ lines, and horn riffs provided the musical backdrop for the vocals band's 4 lead singers. Sly, Freddie, Larry Graham, and Roe Stone traded off on vocal bars on each verse, a style and vocal arrangement that was unusual and revolutionary at the time. Radio programmers really had a tough time categorizing them, right, Sly?
Well, I don't really like categorizing anyway. So that's first of all. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying to you? Man, so, you know, I'd see, at that radio station, I'd see R&B chart and the pop chart and the jazz chart. And it's all music, you know, country and western. It's all music.
It's all music. Jazz trumpeter Miles Davis named Sly Stone and Jimi Hendrix as two of his favorite musicians. Bass player Boosie Collins said that Sly was the best musician he has ever known. And speaking of the bass, the group's bass player, Larry Graham, made his mark on the next hit and many upcoming bass players as well as their music by coming up with a slap and pop bass playing technique that added much more funk to the funk. I'm sure you'll hear what I mean on Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again. My name is Dee DeWayne, and you're listening to The Real Deal. 17, 1969, Sly and the Family Stone performed at Woodstock in front of over 450,000 people. Whew! That's a whole lot of people.
Yeah, at first I was scared, to tell you the truth. Well, I usually am, though, before a concert. I'm always scared. I want to hurry and get it on. Because I can't wait, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it kind of wears me out. But, the Woodstock thing, I walked in the audience. I remember that. I remember there were so many people that I started, even before the gig, I was so glad to be there with Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and those people were my idols, that I thought, man, we better not make a mistake. You know, our group, we better work hard here.
And work hard they did. In fact, they brought the house down with one of their best live performances. Larry Graham said the roar of applause and love from 500,000 people was truly overwhelming. The band soon went on tour and drew praise for their explosive live show, which attracted equal parts black and white audiences. Racial tensions were still very real and prevalent in the United States, and with the band being multiracial, situations would arise from time to time. In fact, at one time, Sly was approached by the Black Panthers, who tried to pressure him to fire the white musicians from the band. Saxophonist and founding member Jerry Martini recalls a time in 1968 when the band performed at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. The band at that time would go on stage one at a time while Sly was already out there with the drummer playing piano on stage. When Jerry Martini stepped out on the stage, the crowd started booing. And I mean booing loud, throwing stuff on stage. Then Sly stopped playing and said, "Hey, you don't have to be black to play in this band. You just have to be able to play. That's when he looked at Jerry and told Jerry, play something. Jerry said he was nervous, scared, but he started blowing. People started quieting down just a little bit. That's when Jerry noticed that a few heads were bobbing in the audience.
Come on.
Sly looked at Jerry and said, go on, man, get it. Jerry said, I'm going to go for it. That's when a few people started standing up going, uh-oh. Hey. Wait a minute. Get it, Jerry. What? A few more people stood up. Next thing you know, the whole first two rows stood up. Oh yeah, go on, Jerry. Do that thing, man. Do that thing. Jerry said, oh, I'm going to get into it now. I'm going to do this now. I'm going to teach these guys a lesson. Get him, Jerry. Get him. Everybody standing up and clapping now. Sly counting off the next song. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You can make it if you try. You can make it if you try. Push a little harder.
A little deeper.
You try. Time still creeping,
especially when you're sleeping.
Wake up.
you can make it.
You know what they say, more money, more problems. And with the band's newfound fame and success came numerous problems. Relationships within the band were deteriorating. There was a friction in particular between the Stone Brothers and Larry Graham. By late 1969, Sly and his bandmates became heavy users of illegal drugs, primarily cocaine and PCP. Band members became increasingly focused on drug use and partying. It was said that Sly even carried a violin case filled with illegal drugs wherever he went. Epic Records was dissatisfied with the band's sporadic recording and their quality started to fall off. Sly's behavior became increasingly more erratic and Epic was expecting new material in 1970, but nothing came forward. That's when the label released the greatest hits album that November. Here's Clive Davis of CBS Records and his thoughts of that time.
The fact that that flow was interrupted, the fact that the power of drugs interrupted this incredible career is a major source of both frustration and sadness.
Frustration and sadness. The Greatest Hits album reached the number 2 spot on the charts, so even though the band was declining, the fan base was still strong and eager for new music. In 1971, Sly and the Family Stone returned with a new single, Family Affair, which became the 4th and final number 1 pop hit for the band. Family Affair was the first number 1 hit to feature a drum machine and a programmed rhythm track. You're listening to The Real Deal.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good to mom, blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
What a bear. What a bear. Still checking each other out. Hey, nobody wants to blow. Nobody wants to be left out. Uh-huh. You can't leave cause your heart is there. But you can't stay cause you've been somewhere else. You can't cry cause you look broke down, but you're crying anyway cause you're all broke down. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
Family Affair was the lead single from the band's long-awaited album, There's a Riot Going On. The album hit the charts at the number one position upon its release in November of 1971, and it earned the distinction as one of the most influential albums of all time. It looked like Sly was on top again, and he did it this time without the Family Stone. This album was mostly recorded by Sly himself in his home studio with help from his sister Rose and friends Billy Preston and Ike Turner. Now, can you just imagine Sly and Ike in the studio? I ain't gonna say it. I ain't even gonna say it. Live bookings for Sly and the Family Stone steadily dropped since 1970 because promoters were afraid that Sly or one of the band members might miss the gig, refuse to play, or pass out from drug use. These issues were regular occurrences for the band during the 70s, and they had an adverse effect on their ability to receive live bookings. At many of these gigs, concertgoers even rioted if the band failed to show up, or if Sly walked out before finishing his set. On June 5, 1974, Sly married model actress Kathy Silva in front of 20,000 people during a sold-out concert performance at Madison Square Garden. It lasted for 5 months. The marriage, not the concert. Anyway, the end was near for the band as Sly continued to release music using the band's name, but recording without the band. This next song started out as an apology that Sly wrote for his wife after a fight. It features Sly informing his lover that she has to let him be himself, otherwise he feels that he's just gonna have to leave. Well, the single was the band's final top 20 pop hit. Here's If You Want Me to Stay on The Real Deal.
You want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about to go, and then you'll know for me to stay, I got to be me. You'll never be in doubt, that's what it's all about. You can't take me for granted and smile. Calvin Gray, I'm gone, forget reaching my phone, because I promise I'll be gone for a while. When you see me again, I hope that you have been the kind of person that you really are now. We got to get in straight, how could I ever be late, when you're my woman taking up my time. Oh, how could you ever allow, I wonder how I would get out of pocket for fun. How when you know that you're never number two, number one gonna be number one. I'll be good. I wish I could get this message over to you now. You shape me again, I hope that you haven't been the kind of person you really are now. I'll be so good, I wish I could get the message over to you now.
In January of 1975, the band attempted to promote a concert without promoters taking on the financial responsibilities and booked the 6,000-seat Radio City Music Hall in New York. Poor ticket sales resulted, and the music hall was only about 1/8 occupied. Not good. In fact, the band had to scrape money together in order to get back home to California. Following this engagement and that experience, the band had enough and was dissolved. Sly had several hits after leaving the Family Stone and is still writing and performs solo from time to time. The Family Stone continues to tour and perform with founding members Jerry Martini and Cynthia Robinson. And I'm here to tell you, if you get a chance to check them out, do so. Their live show is hot and they sound just like the records or better. Believe me, you will have a good time hearing these classic songs live. Recently, Jerry Martini was quoted as saying, "It's more fun now than ever to perform these songs." But there's only one Sly, and we can't duplicate Sly. But we're getting pretty darn close. And having seen them live myself, I would have to agree. My name is Dee Dwayne, and thank you for listening to The Real Deal. The Real Deal is produced by Melody Productions, and we welcome your comments and ideas for future shows. Hit me up at the D-Man, that's the D, M as in Mary, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, N as in Nancy, the D-Man, 524 at hotmail.com, and I'll hit you right back. Always keep it real, and thanks again for listening to The Real Deal.